Well, good morning, TNC family. On this first Sunday in April, we're here today. I want to start with one sentence Jesus spoke, one Pew Research Center and Barnett Research Group finding, and one bit of advice on buying Bibles. First, the sentence of Jesus, recorded in John chapter 13 and verse 35. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. And by the way, the verse just before that, Jesus says, as I have loved you, so you must love others. Second, a few years ago, the Barna Research Group and the Pew Research Center did a survey, and it was one of the largest surveys to date of Christianity and perceptions of Christianity in American public life, where they surveyed folks who self-identified as not being Christians, and they had all kinds of different questions, but one of the questions that people talked a lot about was, they had a huge list of words, like a word cloud, and they asked people who were not Christians to pick the top three words that described Christians. Some of you might remember this. And the number one word Christians were known for was judgmental, looking down on people who live a different lifestyle from theirs or who have different religious values, making the assessment that the problems in our culture stem not from my own Christian thinking and behavior, but from the thinking and behavior of you, non-Christian. Reminds me of that old episode of The Simpsons where Homer Simpson hasn't seen his Christian neighbor Maude for a while, and then finally one day Homer sees Maude in her backyard, and he greets her cheerfully, says, Maude, I haven't seen you around in a couple of weeks. Where have you been? And Maude replies, oh, I've been away at Bible camp, learning how to be more judgmental. And so you have this juxtaposition. I hope you see it. Jesus says the first word that should come to other folks' minds when they know you're a Jesus follower is love. Here comes love. But surveys say the first word that comes to other folks' minds when they know you're a Jesus follower is judgment. Here comes judgment. Which leads to the third bit of introduction, some advice from me to you. Stop buying Bibles. Stop it. And start, it's not the ending point, but start actually spending lots of time reading your Bible, because we don't need to buy more Bibles. In fact, according to the American Bible Society, the average Christian household has three Bibles already. We don't need to buy more Bibles. We need more folks reading and reading wisely the ones they already have. And when I say reading them, I mean reading deeply and slowly and wisely and large sections at a time and engaging fully with the text and the God revealed there and the life of Jesus. When I say reading them, I mean a lot more than reading a verse for the day. Or I got a read the Bible in a year plan and I read random verses for like 5 to 10 minutes a day. Which, in and of itself, isn't bad, but it does often lead to a disposition of, I want to get through the Bible, rather than, I want to get the Bible through me. A disposition of, I'm working the Bible for my purposes, rather than letting it work in me. And it leads to sort of thinking about the Bible, like we think about Google Maps or Waze or other driving apps interfacing with the GPS on our phones. Just get me from point A to point B. Where do I want to go? I want to get to heaven after I die. So what's the Bible's three-verse GPS for getting there? Where do I want to go? I want to get from confusion to the correct position on this theological question. So what does the Bible say about sexuality, finances, what happens after you die, the nature of the Trinity, and so on? Because I got to get from A to B. Where do I want to go? I want to get from a point of confusion to a place of clarity about my current life situation, my job, my family, my friendships. So what verse or teaching should I read to get out of the Bible trustworthy direction for this situation or decision I'm trying to make? Where do I want to go? I got to get from a place of no inspiration to a place of energy and inspiration. I'm lonely. Send me a comforting verse. I'm grieving. Send me a hopeful verse. I'm bored. Send me a purpose-filled verse. I'm poor. Send me a how to get rich verse. Now, TNC, the truth is the Bible is filled with wonderful words about life now and life after you die, and words giving practical life advice, words about God's character, words that give us reason to be hopeful and at peace. So I don't want to say that reading the Bible for some of these reasons is wrong, nor do I want to be too hard on any one of these groups, especially since I've spent time in each group myself, but I do want to call attention to the obvious fact that in whatever group you find yourself, you will be using the Bible for your purposes, and those purposes will not necessarily require anything of you relationally, and almost for sure won't lead you to navigate life with more love. Because what you'll end up with is framed inspirational quotes, catalog teachings, doctrinal or political positions, and statements of do's and don'ts. Or, to expand this point further, in the words of Eugene Peterson, the best-selling author and translator of The Message Translation, quote, "It is entirely possible to come to the Bible in total sincerity, responding to the intellectual challenge it gives, or for the moral guidance it offers, or for the spiritual uplift it provides, and not in any way have to deal with a personal God who desires a personal relationship with you." Said another way, not everyone who gets involved with the Bible wants to get involved with God. But TNC, getting involved with divinity is the purpose of reading the Bible, which requires more than just buying a Bible or using it as a reference book to look up an answer to a pressing personal question. It's going to involve reading it. And reading it not unlike the same way you read a favorite novel or the same way you watch a great movie or a great show on Netflix or Prime or Paramount Plus, which is to say you, when you read a great novel or watch a great show, you don't just read one random page of Harry Potter a day or sign up to get an inspirational quote from Dumbledore to reflect on each morning. And you don't just watch 3 to 4 minutes of a movie or a TV show at a time. Well, there's my 5 minutes of time with Jack Ryan, or the Lincoln Lawyer, or the Crown. I better turn it off now. My goal is just to get through season one in a year. No. In a similar way, we must begin to read the Bible just as we would a great story. Read it in large sections, read it slowly, respectfully, meditatively, not worried about what a character says or does in one episode or in one verse, but rather, what's the entire story? And by the way, last week I took my own advice. I sat down and over the course of 2 evenings picked a very specific translation of the Gospel of Mark, and I read it start to finish about 30 minutes each night, and here's what happened. I got caught up in the drama, identified with the characters, saw some details of their lives I had never seen before. I joined them on their journey. And I found myself sort of unintentionally bailing on, I gotta get the right theology kind of thinking. And instead, I found myself just sort of walking the streets, seeing, smelling, touching, tasting, joining the divine story. And I began to sense, wow, Jesus is treating everybody, not on the basis of their ethnicity, gender, wealth, status, citizenship, or politics. He's treating them just on the basis of their identity as image bearers of the divine. And he's being accused, all right, but he's not being accused of being too judgy. He's being accused of being too inclusive, too generous, too loving. And I just think if we read better, we might get better results. I think our culture might get better results. And now let me explain this from another perspective, from brain science, and specifically the brain science that's been done on London taxi drivers. You might remember the study came out a few years ago where they discovered that London taxi drivers, they hate GPS systems, because they're like living, breathing maps, and you can read all about this in the work of E.A. McGuire, and it's been written about by others now. London is not only a very large city, it is also one of the most complex, with more one-way streets and twisting back alleys and curving rivers and other traffic hazards than most cities. And so before a cabbie is allowed to start work, he or she has to pass a rigorous examination testing their mastery of all the streets. It's a process that involves memorizing thousands of street names and ways to get to those streets at different times of the day or night as traffic conditions change. And here's how the cabbies train for the test. They spend sometimes years walking around everywhere, walking the streets, memorizing, taking notes, figuring out the one-way systems and shortcuts until it just becomes second nature. The result is not just that they are the most effective taxi drivers in the world, hardly ever having to consult a map, but also that their brains have actually changed. Brain scans have shown that taxi drivers' brains actually change shape through that process. The hippocampus enlarges as spatial awareness is enhanced. The hippocampus in the brain is where we do spatial reasoning, and it's typically much larger in cabbies than in an average person. Sort of like how bodybuilders develop biceps and triceps that are different than the average person. And here's the principle from science. When people consistently make choices about their patterns or behavior, physical change takes place within the brain itself. And scientists who study habit forming have written a lot about this. They talk about grooves in the mind, or neuroscientists often use the metaphor of wiring of the brain, which is, of course, a metaphor since there are no wires involved. Rather, information in the brain is passed within the brain by what are basically electric currents. But what happens is, for example, here's another study, violin players develop not only their left hand, but also the section of their brain that controls the left hand. John Medina writes about this in his book, Brain Rules. James Clear writes about this in his bestseller, Atomic Habits. This is linked to the famous 10,000-hour rule. It includes the work of Jeffrey Coleman from his book called Talent is Overrated, where he studies what we would call prodigies, Mozart, Tiger Woods, business moguls, and so on. Because many of us think that Mozart was simply born a musical genius, never had to work a day in his life. He saw the piano one day and it just all made sense. Music just came naturally. But if you think that, you'd be wrong. He had to put in more practice and he received more instruction and exposure to the piano by age 10 than most college degree musicians put in by their graduation day. And his instructor was the skilled and famous Leopold Mozart, his uncle, so it was quality practice time. And Tiger Woods, I think you remember the story. His dad put his high chair in the garage, and he's watching his dad hit 1,000 putts a day while still eating Gerber puree. And the Beatles, in 1960, while they were still an unknown high school rock band, the Beatles went to Hamburg, Germany to play in local clubs all summer long, every day. They were underpaid. The acoustics were terrible. The audiences were unappreciative, but the Beatles grew in skill. Audiences demanded more performances, more playing time. By 1962, they were playing 8 hours per night, 7 nights per week. But it wasn't until 1964 that they burst onto the international scene. Colvin writes that by then the Beatles had played over 1,200 concerts together. And oh, by the way, many bands today don't play 1,200 concerts in their entire career. See, sometimes we see the gift that somebody has, whether it's a skill or even the gift of patience or joy or self-control. But we underestimate the grind it took that person to be able to operate with the gift. What happens is, though, over time, when people consistently make choices about their patterns or behavior, physical change takes place within the brain itself. So just hang with me. This is going to be a shorter podcast today. What if we actually didn't try to use the Bible as a phone book or an encyclopedia or a GPS system to just get from point A to point B? But what if we walked the streets of the Bible? What if we went down its alleys and valleys, went up hills and around corners, eavesdropped on conversations, studied together, and prayed and read huge sections at a time? What if we joined the story? And next week, we're going to talk more about what that story is, because sometimes we misread the story. But today, I just want to leave us with this image, this question, which is, in the same way that walking the streets of London changes the physical makeup of a London taxi driver's brain, in the same way that the grind of practicing violin or golf for 10,000 hours leads to the gift of music or to hitting 2 under par at the Masters, what if you can develop moral muscles through walking the streets of the Bible, entering the story, engaging with God, in the same way going to the gym leads to the development of physical muscles? And what if, by extension, I meet God and begin to develop ways of seeing the world more aligned with the ways of Jesus? And what if the decision to hold my tongue with an annoying neighbor and instead to cultivate calm patience leaves a neural pathway which makes it easier to be patient when someone later behaves in a truly offensive manner? And what if generosity today makes me more generous tomorrow? Or on the other side of that coin, what if the decision to cheat on my tax return leaves an electronic pathway in the brain which makes it easier to cheat on other things or people? And we're going to talk more about all of this next week, because the Bible cannot just be a good luck piece to bring God's blessing or a code book to reveal the secrets that will solve our problems. Rather, it needs to be a book that helps us walk the streets and drive the roads of the real world with a fresh perspective, a perspective that leads to life and joy and wholeness. We need to be able to open the book and read it and discover that as we turn the pages, we are laying our fingers on the heart of God. So, let's not buy any more Bibles, but let's start reading them. Will you pray with me? God, will you give us a spirit and a joy today to pursue this book as you pursue us through it? May we discover through it wisdom for our families, patience for our trials, and purpose for our days. And may we come to know the one who fulfilled the scriptures and in whom we place our hope today. And now, TNC, I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you, make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you, turn his face toward you, and give you peace. Amen.